Welcome to Radio Plays, a podcast devoted to presenting exciting new plays from around the world. Each episode will bring a brand new work off the page and straight to you, sharing the latest from both up-and-coming and veteran playwrights. This week, we'll be performing Copper Angel by Emily MacLean. This is the first act in a two-episode arc. Based on the life and life-changing work of artist Anna Coleman Ladd, Copper Angel begins as Anna is thrust from the comfort of her Boston home and into the middle of the First World War. Initially overwhelmed by the horrors of war, she soon discovers how her abilities as a sculptor can bring hope and healing to injured soldiers scarred by the conflict. Based on true events, Copper Angel delves into both the physical and mental traumas of battle, the struggle to find and fight for one's place, and, ultimately, the hope and strength that can be found even in the direst of circumstances. Her work exhibits little variety and is best described as pleasant and inoffensive to the eye. Darling!
What's this now?
This review of the portrait exposition. It's dreadful.
Pleasant isn't necessarily a bad comment, Anna, dearest.
I believe damning with faint praise is the correct term for it.
Oh, come now. It's not that bad. It goes on to say that you show a true talent for capturing the nobility of the American Eastern Seaboard.
It's clearly meant as yet another slight, as if the portraits I paint don't matter as much as those who choose to paint landscapes, just because I like to paint the faces of my friends.
And your friends just happen to be women from wealthy families of Boston, New York, and Philadelphia.
Precisely. I'm being punished for having wealthy connections. It's just petty jealousy.
I completely agree, dear. Best not to give it another moment's thought. Anna.
Yes?
Your spoon, dear.
Oh, sorry, Maynard, darling.
I thought we decided that we weren't going to be bothered by silly comments from the art critics of this city.
I'm not bothered.
Your violent spoon suggests otherwise.
I'm not bothered. I'm not given a fair chance. You know my paintings would be considered excellent if people didn't know they were painted by... me.
Anna, you have to understand that people enjoy taking advantage of a powerful person's exposed position. That's all these art critics are doing. You are a wealthy woman from one of these... noble families of the Eastern Seaboard. You are talented, of course, but criticizing your work is low-hanging fruit.
What should I do? Start painting haystacks and flowers? Misshapen forms dancing in a circle? Change what I like to do because I want to please the art critic from the Boston Globe?
I'm not suggesting that you do anything of the kind. I'm merely pointing out that your privileged circumstances, more than a statement on your skill as an artist, might be what the critic is commenting on with each review.
Perhaps if I painted under another name?
Perhaps. Of course, you wouldn't be able to attend the gallery openings if you painted under a pseudonym. That would give the whole game away.
All right. Have your fun at my expense, I suppose.
Anna, you are talented, but you are much too wrapped up in the ephemera of the art world. Why do you paint in the first place?
You know why I paint. I enjoy it. It's calming to me to create something beautiful.
And? Any other reason?
Because I went to school to paint and sculpt. It wouldn't be prudent to go to school to learn a skill and then not utilize it. You trained for years to be a doctor at great expense, and now here you are, a highly respected physician earning an excellent salary. You wouldn't suddenly decide to be a bricklayer, would you?
I can't say that would hold much appeal. But if I woke up one day and fainted at the sight of blood, perhaps stone and mortar would occupy me better. Just because you train at something doesn't mean that's all you can ever do.
I know that. But what I love about painting, or rather one of the main things I love about painting, is seeing the reaction of people when they see my work. The delight that comes over Marie's face when she looks at her portrait feeds my soul. I want to paint 1,000 portraits just like it to make her smile over and over again.
That would be quite a costly enterprise.
I don't mean literally. But the fact that everyone is laughing at me, it robs me of that joy.
Darling, I hate to see you upset. And I hate to think of anything robbing you of the joy you find in painting. What can I do for you?
Tell the editor of the Boston Globe to fire this art critic.
You know I would do it in a heartbeat for you, my darling. But I don't think the editor of the Globe would care much for the unsolicited opinion of the second surgeon of Massachusetts General Hospital, do you?
You'll be the head of surgery soon, Maynard. You are tremendously well-respected, so it's only a matter of time before the advisory board recognizes it, too.
Well, that's neither here nor there. Are you feeling any better? I don't want you reading these art reviews anymore. This man wouldn't know decent art if it fell on top of him. His opinion isn't worth the paper it's printed on.
But, Maynard...
to see how they upset you. If you're going to continue painting, and I don't want you to lose that lovely diversion, believe me, but if you're going to continue painting, you've got to let these things go. Come, give us a kiss. There. Now, may I give you a kiss?
Maynard! Oh, I adore you, my darling man.
This conflict has gone on for longer than any of us initially expected it to, but the important fact to keep in mind is that we are engaged in a struggle for the future of not just England or France, but of the entire world. We are facing down the Ottoman Empire, the Kaiser and his minions. We must hold the line against them. Now, when the German army invaded a sovereign nation, we had a responsibility to our allies to respond in kind. Heard fellow countrymen looking at the cost of the war in both human and monetary terms decry our involvement. They went to the wounded soldiers, to the costs of the guns and the machinery of war. And yes, it's gone on longer than we would like, but we are closing in on the end. Victory is within reach, and we cannot give up. We cannot allow the aggressions of our enemy to push us into the dustbin of history. When a nation declares war, it is the responsibility of every patriot within her borders to stand up and be counted. You can rest assured that God himself is blessing this just cause. I ask you now, those amongst you who have not yet volunteered, why? Why do you let your fellow countrymen shoulder this burden alone? Will our country's children know their fathers and grandfathers did all they could to protect their freedom? To ensure their safety against a world dominated by Germany? I say to you now, assembled here before me, that we need every man, every able-bodied man, to step up for service in this noble cause. You, sir, you, will you sign up today?
Is that you, Maynard?
Good evening, dear heart.
How was your day?
Long, but ultimately fruitful. Don't tell me you're still working at this puzzle. You were here when I left this morning. Have you moved from this spot all day?
I wasn't here the entire day. Truly, I just sat back down.
You shouldn't be doing that in this dimly lit room anyway. Tell me, did you have a nice day?
I did. I missed you, though.
Darling, come over here and sit down. I need to speak with you about something very important, and I want your full, undivided attention.
Of course, Maynard.
I know. We've always said that we are quite settled here in Boston. Your family is here. Mine is close by in New York. We're happy here. Solid social position. I've got a good job at the hospital. We have plenty of friends, and you have a nice diversion with your portrait painting.
Yes?
I wouldn't want to disrupt that for anything in the world. But the general administrator of the hospital came to speak with me today. There's a position. No. An opportunity. The kind of opportunity I've been waiting for, but never seemed to materialize into something
that... Where?
It's the chance to be the administrator of an entire surgical staff, overseeing dozens of doctors in one of the most essential...
Where is it, Maynard?
Toul.
Where on earth is that?
France.
Maynard! No. Absolutely not. France?
It's an incredible opportunity. It would be a way for me to contribute to the war effort without technically serving. I felt very limited in my ability to feel valuable in the grand scheme of things.
But France? That's in the middle of the fighting. The worst of the fighting.
Logical, then, that it's the place that the military wants to establish a surgical hospital, isn't it?
This is too much, Maynard. I don't want to leave my home. My life is here.
I suppose I could go alone. We could be apart for the time that I'm working there. You could continue to live here, and I could set up a small place in Toul.
How long will that be?
There's no way to know for sure. 2 years, five. The war could drag on for years, or it could come to an end next month. I love you so much. I would be so lonesome without you by my side. You're my wife, my companion. But I understand that what I'm asking of you is a tremendous burden. I want it to be your decision.
My decision? Could my decision be that you don't take the position?
Well, no. I've already agreed to take the job.
If you've already agreed, then there doesn't seem to be much left to discuss.
Please, don't get upset.
You agreed without even consulting with me? You agreed to take a job in a war-torn country, all because you're feeling left out of the excitement?
Now, that's a gross oversimplification of the
situation. Is it? I don't think so.
I have the opportunity to help men who have been wounded in fighting to break the Kaiser's grip on Europe. They've suffered terrible injuries, and I could ease some of that suffering. It's not feeling left out.
At what cost? Surely you could help the soldiers when they return to America.
Well, the need is too great and too immediate. I don't expect you to have an appreciation of the horrors of war. I'm truly glad that you don't. But this is something I've decided that I need to do.
You're leaving me to live here all alone for God knows how long, and I get no say in the matter.
You could join me. There's no need for you to live here alone except for your own stubbornness.
It's not stubbornness to fear for your safety in the middle of a battlefield, Maynard.
Come with me, please. Annie, it will be an adventure. I don't want to live without you.
This is too much to ask of me.
I don't see it that way at all. If I am a success at this work, which I have every reason to believe I will be, there will be no denying my qualifications for head of surgery here when I return. This offer is practically a guarantee. The board president said so himself.
My choices are... live here alone, wondering if I'll ever see you again while you're halfway across the world, or accompany you to that same war-torn hellscape, leaving everything I've ever known. Also, you can mend some broken soldiers.
Where is your sense of obligation? Your sense of duty to your husband?
You were the one who said I could stay here if I chose.
I didn't think you would seriously consider it.
Maynard, I don't want to leave. And I don't want you to take this job. Couldn't you tell the administrator you've changed your mind?
I've agreed to go. They're expecting me now, and I'm not going back on my word. There's a steamer that leaves in 3 weeks. I have time to add you to the manifest to join me. I want you to be with me. But most of all, I want you to want to be with me. What do you say?
Fine. I'll go.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Oh, Annie. Oh, that's lovely. Good girl.
We'll have our own house in France. I won't be in some awful boarding barracks with the other doctor's wives, will I?
No, of course not, darling, no. You will have a lovely little cottage of your very own. We can grow vegetables and flowers for you to paint. Maybe even some haystacks while we're at it, huh? There, there. It's going to be quite an adventure. You'll see. Oh, thank you, Anna. Truly. I love you.
When I was asked to travel to France to tend to the wounded soldiers that were coming back from the trenches and the front lines, I was prepared for battlefield injuries of the like I'd never seen before. Single bullet wounds, occasional shrapnel, bayonet or knife injuries even. But I was completely unprepared for what awaited me. Men brought in by the wagon load, blasted apart and held together with bandages and twine. Men so badly burned over their bodies they didn't even look human anymore. The wagons and the stretchers and the ambulances just kept coming, dumping men off in broken piles and turning around to get another load. Machine gun fire was a level of devastation never seen before. The bullets had ripped through flesh and destroyed everything in their path. And if the bullet didn't kill you, then the infection that followed surely would. In one of the field hospitals, we set up a military guillotine to amputate limbs. We stacked them up like firewood. Thank God for anesthesia. The groans of the wounded men haunt my dreams to this day. They lived. At what cost? I wish there was a way to quiet those sounds. Morphine helps, of course. But they always come back.
Goodness.
Oh.
I'm so sorry. I'm looking for my husband.
You shouldn't be back here. This is a surgical consult room for patients and doctors only.
I know. It's just I've been waiting downstairs for some time. Almost an hour. I thought I could just pop in and see him for just a moment. Perhaps in between consultations. There were some workmen coming to the house this afternoon, and I wanted to make sure I understood the instructions he left for them. I think he may have mistranslated them into French, and...
You still can't be back here. I'll let Dr. Ladd know you stopped by.
Well, since I'm here now, I might as well stay until he comes. Don't you think that would be just as easy? He's coming here in a few minutes, I'm sure.
Yes, ma'am, with a patient, for a consultation.
Do you think the soldier will mind if I ask one or two quick questions to my husband?
Madam Ladd, the men in this hospital are here because they have all suffered grievous injuries in need of major surgery. They should have your husband's full and immediate attention. Whatever issue you are having with the workmen at your house, surely, can wait until this evening?
No, you're right. Of course. I'm sorry, that was very insensitive of me. I don't speak a whole lot of French yet, and I'm finding myself, alone for a good deal of the time.
Of course. Dr. Ladd is one of the best surgeons here, and his skills are in high demand.
I know. I'm glad he can be a blessing to these poor wounded men.
Yes, he is.
Do you ever assist in the surgeries? I know some nurses only change dressings, dispense medicine, things like that.
I'm fully trained to assist in surgeries.
Oh, what's that? Is that... I imagine that's an... interesting occupation.
Yes, I find it very fulfilling. Madam Ladd, please, Go back to the downstairs sitting room. I will let Dr. Ladd know you stopped by.
Is there any way I could volunteer? Rolling bandages or serving food or something?
What?
I feel terribly useless just sitting alone at the house all day long. And Maynard, Dr. Ladd, he works here at the hospital every single day, even Sundays. He never worked Sundays in Boston.
Things are a little different here than in America.
You never answered my question about volunteering.
You'll have to speak with the head matron. She's downstairs, in the office, next to the sitting room.
Oh. Here we are, Mr. Sullivan. Dr. Ladd will be in to see you in just a moment. We are very fortunate to be in such good hands. He has been able to help so many young men with really terrible injuries, much worse than yours. You'll be shipshape in no time.
Madam Ladd, I must ask that you return to the downstairs sitting room. It's most inappropriate for you to be present during a patient consultation.
What happened to him? Why does he need surgery?
His cheek and nose were damaged by shrapnel, and the wound became infected. It's a very serious injury, although not immediately life-threatening. Oh.
No, Mr. Sullivan, we mustn't do that. You've got to wait until Dr. Ladd is here. We spent all yesterday putting fresh bandages on, and we don't want to risk another infection. Please!
William, that's enough. Settle down. I'm sure Dr. Ladd will be here in a moment, and he will remove the part of the bandages that he needs to inspect. You mustn't get ahead of yourself. For heaven's sake, Mrs. Ladd, if you're going to be sick, please do it in a wastebasket. So we don't have more to clean up when you leave.
I'm so sorry. Oh, that poor man.
Oh. It's all right, William. It will be fine once Dr. Ladd can see to you. You mustn't fret. You'll be able to go home soon. Think about how nice that will be. Focus your attention on that.
I need to go.
Yes, you do.
Good afternoon, nurse.
Oh.
Anna.
Dr.
What
Ladd.
What are you doing up here?
I came to see you. I had questions about the work on the house and...
You shouldn't be up here, darling. You should be down in the sitting room. Why is she here in the consultation room?
Every attempt was made to send her back down there to wait, Dr. Ladd. Believe
no,
me.
No, she's right. She told me I needed to go and... Maynard, please tell me you're going to be able to help that young man. He's missing his cheek and nose. It's completely gone.
I'm meeting with him to discuss that very thing, but really you shouldn't concern yourself with it. It'll just upset you. Run along home and I'll see you tonight. I'm sure whatever questions you had about the work on the house can wait until then.
Yeah, I understand, but...
There's nothing more to discuss at the moment, Anna. Please go home now and we'll talk later. I must see to my patient.
Of course. I'm sorry to bother you, darling. I'll see you at the house.
I'm not here to ask for pity or to make you feel guilty about what you don't know. I was told you would be appreciative of my sacrifice. My doctor says I'm lucky to be alive. Lucky. I was one of 10 out of my entire company to survive the attack. 122 men and only 10 of us survived. Most died of burns and exposure after the shelling, but the rest died in the days after. They didn't tell us that in the cold weather, the gas would settle and linger on the ground, long after it was no longer visible. There's a little bit of irony in that, isn't there? I lost my sight to something that wasn't visible when I encountered it. I shouldn't laugh. I am one of the lucky ones. If I had inhaled more of it, well, it wasn't a pleasant-sounding way to die. Is there a pleasant way to die? Perhaps in your sleep. I'm not sure. I don't sleep much anymore. People ask me what it felt like. It's like a burning, like you've gotten salt in your eye. But no matter how hard you rub, how much water you splash in it, the salt doesn't go away. It's all you can think of. Your entire mind just fills with the sensation of burning. There's a moment when you can't hold your eyelids open anymore, and you have one last glimpse of recognizable light. Then nothing. No light anymore. You don't know it at the time, but That's when the optic nerve is being damaged by the toxins. That burst of light is the separation, the last thing you will ever see. Lucky. Guess I am.
Maynard, darling, I've just had a visit from Mr. Wood.
Who?
Derwent Wood. He works at the field hospital in Lorraine.
Is he a doctor? I've never heard of a Dr. Wood.
No, darling, he's a sculptor, an artist like me.
But you said he works at the hospital.
He's doing the most amazing work with young men who have disfigurements. He makes wearable plate masks for them. Look, he makes them from custom molds he makes of the man's face. Each piece is created from a sheet of copper that he shapes onto the mold. Then he paints the piece to match the skin of the wounded man. He fashions it to a harness or headband. Then the man can wear it when he's out in the world. Derwent says that many men have told him people don't immediately realize it's a mask at all.
That's quite impressive. He works in the British hospital, you said.
I'm not sure. I just met him today. He was in Toul visiting several men with facial wounds. Each mask takes him 2 weeks to fashion and fit to the patient, so it's very slow going for all the men who could be helped.
Of course. And more poor souls being brought in from the front every day. Did you really spend 3 francs on fresh flowers last week? This is a mistake, I'm sure. I'm balancing the household accounts. 3 francs at the flower shop, is that right?
Possibly. That sounds correct.
That's outrageous! We can't afford to be frittering away money on flowers.
I wanted to paint a still life, and the flowers in our garden weren't blooming yet. You said you wanted me to paint.
Well, have you thought about painting from memory? Seems like a more prudent option.
Really, Maynard? What would you think about me helping Derwent Wood in his studio?
Helping him? Helping him do what?
He was very interested when he found out I'm a painter and sculptor, and he said the main thing keeping him from helping more wounded men is the lack of skilled help. I could be that help, and once I get the hang of the techniques, perhaps open my own studio here. So there would be 2 places men could receive assistance.
I don't know about all this, Anna. You just met this man today. And would you be helping him at the hospital or at his studio?
I'm not sure. Both, perhaps?
I don't like it at all. It's... Well, surely you don't need me to tell you how that appears from an outside observer.
Maynard! I hadn't even thought of that, but...
You're my wife. And you'd be working with this Derwent Wood person and soldiers, perhaps? Even being alone with them for extended periods of time? No. Even if you were truly helping, it leaves you open to being the subject of unpleasant rumors.
Derwent is in his late 50s. I doubt anyone would assume we're having a passionate affair. And if they were, that seems to be an indication of their lurid imagination and not a statement on my character. He seemed to be a friendly and kind man who was able to find a way to use his talents to help wounded men. I think I could do the same. I want to be of use. Can't you see that?
You are of use. You've been very helpful volunteering at the hospital. The matron was telling me just yesterday how efficient you are. She has to create tasks just to keep you busy.
She said those words?
Mm-hmm.
Hardly a compliment.
Well, I might not be repeating it accurately. It felt more complimentary when she said it. In any event, that is an appropriate avenue for you to contribute to the war effort. This mask-making enterprise seems very suspect. Who's paying for this?
Derwent said that the Office of Veterans Affairs was paying for the pieces he created in his studio in London. I don't know who is paying for the pieces he is creating here in France.
It's quite an expensive venture, I imagine. If each piece takes several weeks to create.
No more than an extensive surgery and recovery, I suppose.
Are you conflating life-saving surgical intervention with this vanity project?
Maynard, how callous! I'm surprised at you!
I stand by my statement. These men are damn lucky to be alive. And yet, they insist on more treatment so they look like themselves again? And the government is allocating military resources for this purpose.
Tell me how a man who lost his nose to an explosion is any different from a man who lost a leg receiving a wooden one from the government.
A wooden leg will allow that man to continue to work, contribute to society, and feel that his sacrifice, while painful, was not in vain. A man can continue to work without a nose.
I'm not going to argue with you about this. I would like to participate in this project. I am going to learn the techniques from Derwent while he is here.
Oh, Anna. No.
I'm sorry. I've already agreed to help him.
What?
You heard me. I have already told Derwent that I would love to work with him while he's here and learn the techniques he has adapted for this work.
You agreed without speaking to me first.
It doesn't feel very good, does it?
I'm shocked you would accept a position like this without speaking with me first. I don't like this at all.
Well, I'm sorry, Maynard. I don't want to go back on my word.
Don't parrot my words back at me and think yourself clever for doing so.
You're being quite unreasonable about all of this, if you ask me.
I'm trying to protect you! The man you saw when you came into the hospital that day was in excellent condition compared to some of his fellow soldiers. Some of these men looked like deformed, melted candles. They looked like walking nightmares. The nurses told me about how you were almost sick to your stomach at the sight of poor Sullivan's injuries. How on earth will you manage when you're expected to interact with these men? Touch them to make a mold of their mangled features? Do you seriously think that for a moment you have the nerve to do that? It's absurd, Anna.
I'm sorry you don't approve. I wish that you did, or at least that you could understand my reasoning. I'm going to the hospital tomorrow to watch him make a plaster mold of a young man. I will get to see the entire process from start to finish. Perhaps if you have some time between patients tomorrow, you could stop in and meet him.
Are you going to be alone with him during all of this?
The soldier will be there too, unless you're worried about rumors of a ménage à trois.
Anna!
I wasn't sure how prurient these speculations were going to get, so I wanted to get to the inevitable conclusion as quickly as possible.
Is there anything I can say to convince you to tell him you've changed your mind?
Why are you asking this of me? It's so unlike you, Maynard. Have I ever given you reason to doubt me before?
No. No, I suppose you have not.
Well, why should this be any different?
I do wish you'd reconsider, but I imagine that is a futile wish. So my only request is that you don't get any poor young man's hopes up unnecessarily. These lads have been through utter hell, and for many of them, the prospect of living as a deformed wretch is just a continuation of more torture. If you end up not being as good at this as you think you'll be, please don't make a man's life worse by getting his hopes up. Do you understand?
I understand. I promise I won't build up false hope. I promise, Maynard. Thank you. I'm not asking for your blessing, but I appreciate your understanding.
Yes, well, no more money on flowers, though.
Of course, darling. No more money on flowers.
Yes.
We're buying plaster and copper now.
Yes. Okay. Mwah.
Alec was so alive. He was the most vibrant person I've ever known. I knew the first night we met, I must spend my life with him. We were engaged at the end of that summer and married when I turned 16. Then the war broke out. Alec joined the army. I begged him to continue to work in his father's boucherie, to let his brothers join up. Where did he have to go? I cried myself to sleep every night the 2 weeks before he left. He kissed me, stroking my hair while I cried. He never told me to stop crying or that I was being foolish. He just held me. But he still left. He was wounded in the Battle of Ardennes. The letter I received said he was grievously wounded, but attended to by battlefield physicians. This was touted as a blessing. And it was, I suppose. Alec lived. The letter asked that I not come to the hospital where he was completing his recovery. The doctors recommended that it would speed up his recovery if I were to write him letters but not come to visit. That should have been a warning flag to me. But I was so naive. I believed what they told me, these doctors. The day he was fully discharged from the hospital, I arrived 3 hours early. The nurses brought him out in their wheelchair, his face still covered in bandages. I remember thinking how odd that was, that he was still wearing all those bandages months after he was wounded. Surely the wounds would have healed by now, I said to myself. How completely idiotic I was. When his eyes met mine, there was no joy in them. No, they were scared. My heart broke a little in that moment. I knew that something was terribly wrong. We didn't speak the whole ride home. Alec could barely form coherent words. He could nod stiffly, but that was the extent of his ability to communicate. I was numb. I felt a deep sense of dread growing in the pit of my stomach. What was underneath the bandages? What was so horrible they purposely kept me from seeing him all these months? When we arrived at home, Alec went in and motioned that he was tired and was going to lay down. He went to her bed and fell asleep with the bandages still wrapped around his face. I was tempted to try to remove the bandages myself and confront my fear. After all, fear of the shadow of the thing is often much worse than the thing itself. Isn't that what they say? I barely touched the first layer of the bandages when he awoke and shoved my hand away. I said, "Please, let me see you." He refused, tears welling in his eyes. I took his hands and I said, "I'm your wife. I love you. Please, let me help." I don't know what I expected, but I watched as he removed the bandages. It was so much worse than I could have ever imagined. His lips were gone. Just a smooth slit in the scar tissue indicated where his mouth should be. His cheekbones were hollowed out. His nose was a crumpled nub of flesh, unrecognizable and featureless. He looked like a creature from a nightmare. With such sad eyes. I know he saw the revulsion in my face. I couldn't try to hide it. I was so shocked. They should have warned me. The doctors should have told me so I could prepare myself. I could have comforted him, but they kept the truth from me. To protect me, it was an unimaginable cruelty. Alec shot himself 2 months after being discharged home. I could no longer face this life as the horror I'd become. I have no desire to spend my days hiding from the disgust in my beloved wife's eyes. Forgive me, Marie. Remember me as I was. Forget the monster I became. I tried to hide it from him. But he's right. I never stopped wishing that the scars and the deformities would fall away and beneath him would be him. His beautiful jaw, his soft, warm smile, all the wonderful features that I loved so deeply. This is my failure as his wife. I know. And I detest myself for it.
Do you have everything that you'll need? Can I get you anything?
No, thank you, dear. I think I've got everything ready for the initial consultation. But I appreciate you coming by to check on me.
Well, I want you to know that I support your desire to help these men. It's an admirable goal.
I appreciate your indulgence in the matter.
I know that you're enthusiastic to get started, but I want to caution you against coming on too strong. Some of these boys are still... Well, the new term for it is shell-shocked. I'm not totally set on that terminology myself, but it does have a certain connection to what they seem to be experiencing. They tend to be a little numb, not totally engaged with the world around them. So I know you're excited, but just
remember... Maynard, I'm not going to scare them away. Honestly, you talk to me as if I were a child.
Are you serving them alcohol? This is a hospital, not a cafe.
Derwent had more success with the mold when the patient was relaxed. Some of the men are holding so much tension from their nervousness it can distort the results of the mold and make it unusable. So he suggested offering a glass of wine in the initial consultation.
Try to keep it out of sight of the nurses. I shudder to think what they'd say about you serving the patient's wine.
I think you're concerned over nothing. It's a glass of wine, nothing more.
These men are fragile. They've been through hell and they are trying to remember how to be human again.
My goal is to assist them in that, not to hinder them. I've watched Derwent work with the soldiers for a month. I see how you and the nurses here interact with the men. I think I have a good sense of how I need to behave. Go away, please. I don't want you to make my patient nervous with your lurking.
Very well. I'll be down the hall if you need anything, all right?
Darling, I will be fine. Thank you for being such a worrywart, though. I love you for that. Truly, I do.
Oh, hello. Welcome. Please, please, come in. Sit down. How are you?
Well, thank you.
Can I pour you a glass of wine?
I'm allowed to drink?
Normally, no, but, they've given special permission for men that are having a mask mold made.
Could you use a drink? Seem anxious?
I suppose there's no harm in, have they told you much about this process?
No. Just that I could cover up my injury.
Yes. You'll be my very first patient.
Do you know what you're doing?
Yes. I have been working with Derwent Wood for the past few months, and I was an artist when I lived in America.
You were an artist? For a job?
Yes. Well, it was, more of my hobby, I suppose. My husband was a doctor, and, Where are you from?
Why?
I'm making small talk. I'm sorry if I offended you.
Not going back, so it doesn't matter.
Why won't you go back? After your rehabilitation, you'll be free to go home.
Couldn't bear it. Better to stay here.
Ah. Do you know why you've been recommended for this procedure?
Already said that. Disguise my neck.
Yes. I requested that the surgeons recommended a man who they thought would benefit the most. Someone who needed the comfort of regaining their former self. Your name was the first on their list. I don't want you to think of this as an act of charity. You deserve this for the injuries you've sustained in your service. It's my desire to help make you whole again.
You're going to give me a new jaw?
It's not exactly a new jaw, but it might give you a sense of confidence. Comfort to be out in the world again.
You think I want that?
Don't all people want that?
Never be seen as anything other than a broken man. Something grotesque. Something to pity. No. Don't want that. Don't care to go back out in the world.
I see.
Does that surprise you?
What?
You think I'd be falling all over myself to thank you?
No. Don't be absurd. I wasn't expecting that.
Really?
You were the person the doctors here thought could benefit the most. I don't wish to come across as rude, but I'm just trying to help. I want to use my talents to help soldiers like yourself.
Your husband doesn't think I should still be here.
Why?
Said I was healed and no more infection. Said I could even go back to the front if I wanted. Or I could go home.
That's good, isn't it?
No. Who'll hire a man with no jaw?
So your plan is to stay in the hospital forever?
Seems better than being a burden on my brother and his wife.
Mr. Edgars.
Clarence.
Clarence. It's natural to be anxious about what the next phase of your life looks like.
You think you can just slap a mask on me and suddenly I'm gonna stroll off, happily ever after?
No, but
I've got nothing to go back to. I've got no prospects, nothing ahead of me, except to be a monster for the rest of my days.
My goal is not to wipe away all memory of what happened to you. That's impossible. I want to give you a way to exist in the world where the first thing people notice about you isn't your injury. That's all.
Not possible. How can you disguise this?
Mr. Edgars, what's wrong?
Sorry, I need to go. Don't want any more today.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry if I did something.
No, it was a mistake. Take my name off the list.
No, please don't say that. I was looking forward to helping.
I'm not your charity project. Find someone else to ease your boredom. The nurses bring Clarence Edgars to a consultation room. They move slowly, with dreamlike softness. Clarence stands very still, letting them fully remove his bandages. The nurses exit with the bandages, leaving him alone. He looks up, feeling the warmth of the light as it grows more intense. He has a moment of freedom and weightlessness. He seems to forget his injury, and he sways happily. He is open and finds a way to express the joy he feels, even if he cannot smile in the traditional sense. He laughs. But he doesn't speak.
Anna enters with a small cart of her mask-making supplies.
Clarence turns to face her, then backs away. He moves to the edge of the pool of light, ready to step out into the darkness. He stops short and has a rising sense of panic. All the confidence and calm that he had moments before vanishes, and he shrinks back, closing into himself.
Anna goes to his side and tries to turn him to face her.
We move slowly together. Clarence stops turning.
Anna moves around to stand in front of him. She looks into his eyes.
And he draws back. The heavy weight of his condition creeps back into his body. He draws his hands to his injury to cover it up.
Anna tries to get him to put his hands down.
And he resists her. She relents, going back to her cart.
She beckons him to join her, showing him the items on the cart.
He walks to the cart.
And she gives him some of the sculpting tools, letting him turn them over in his hands. Anna brings a chair over.
While Clarence inspects the items, he is disinterested and distracted and shakes his head when she gestures to the chair.
Maynard enters, watching the scene unfold, but unnoticed.
Anna becomes frustrated, her movements becoming more persistent, trying to pull him to the chair.
Clarence resists, finally jerking back from her in anger. He bumps against the cart, knocking the whole thing over.
Anna runs to clean up.
Clarence is ashamed and offers to help.
We kneel together. And Anna reaches out to Clarence's injury, placing her hand on his neck. She is not tentative in her contact with his injury.
He is still.
Everything is still. Like the world is holding its breath.
Maynard gestures, beckoning the nurses back on.
Clarence almost nods, almost allows her help.
When the nurses join them, bringing fresh bandages, Anna stands, upset at their interruption.
The nurses help Clarence back into the chair and proceed to replace his bandages. Each time they touch him, seems to burn, and he twists away in pain. They restrain him to the chair.
Anna tries to intervene, but is blocked by one of the nurses. The nurses finish replacing the bandages and step away to reveal that he is tied to the chair. His hands are bound, and his breath is ragged as he is exhausted from the struggle. The nurses stand behind him, a protective hand oppressively on each shoulder.
Clarence slumps forward, pressing his face into his bound hands, and cries.
Anna is distraught, standing at her cart of mask-making supplies, helpless.
Maynard crosses over to her.
And she shakes her head sadly.
Maynard gently takes one of the sculpting tools from her hands and sets it back on the cart. Nurse, did the matron ever bring up the other patient files I requested yesterday?
I couldn't say, Doctor. I was assisting Dr. Willis until very late last night.
And you're here, right back at it the next morning. I wish that more of the nursing staff had your vigor.
Thank you, Doctor. I don't feel very vigorous. The patient we were working on died this morning.
I'm sorry to hear that.
He was just a boy.
I'm sure you did the best you could.
He died begging for his mother.
Yes. Well, that happens, of course. It's unfortunate, but that's the
Have you discharged Clarence Edgars?
Who?
Clarence, my patient. I was working with him to build a prosthetic for his jaw. I came to meet with him again, and the nurse on that floor told me he's been discharged.
Darling, calm down. There's no sense in getting upset. Nurse, could you check on this for me?
Mm-hmm.
Maynard, he was not prepared to be out in the world yet. If you had seen him or spoken with him like I had, you would have seen
We have three times the number of wounded men than we have beds. And there are more coming in every single day. A man who has all his limbs and no infection or need for close medical supervision has to be discharged. That's just the holy only of it, Anna.
He needed help. It's like you said, some of the men are shell-shocked. They don't seem to be themselves all the time.
I have to make difficult decisions. It's part of being the head of the hospital. I'm sorry that he was one of your projects.
He had asked to be removed from the list. He didn't want my help.
Well, I'm disappointed to hear that. But perhaps it was for the best that he was discharged then? You can focus your attentions on someone that will better benefit from
your... I think he wanted help. He just doesn't think he deserves it.
Darling, he clearly didn't desire the type of help you were offering. Sometimes that happens. These men have been through so much, and we have to... Well, we have to meet them where they are sometimes. You understand? In the long run, this was probably for the best. I don't see much sense in getting the hopes up for a magic remedy that doesn't really exist, do you?
What?
Dr. Ladd.
Oh, thank you. It appears that Clarence Edgars was discharged from the hospital yesterday.
Where did he go?
To his home, I presume.
No, that's not right. He told me he wouldn't go back to England. He said he didn't want to be a burden to his brother here in France either. Maynard, where did he go?
Once a patient is discharged, there's really nothing more that we do for them. They're ready to resume their lives.
But he wasn't.
Really, Anna, calm down. That decision was not yours to make. Why don't you head home and we will discuss this tonight?
If you had just spoken with him...
I spoke with him myself, Madam Ladd. He was fine. Chipper, even. Ready to start this next chapter of his life.
He did not seem that way to me during our consultation.
I can assure you, he was ready to leave the dreary confines of the hospital. Once a man has recovered, it can be more detrimental to his health to stay among more seriously wounded men.
Mm-hmm. There is a good deal of truth in that, absolutely. Why don't you walk back to the house now? I'll be home for dinner tonight, and we can discuss it. Perhaps look ahead to another project or a way for you to be of service in some other area. This mask-making enterprise doesn't seem to be working out.
Did he leave a forwarding address? A place where he could be reached?
I don't believe that he did, Madam Ladd.
Let me see the file. I'll check.
There's no need for that.
Why are you trying to get me to go home? Is there something else going on?
No, but this is a surgical hospital, not a vanity project for Derwent Wood.
Maynard!
I need these files.
Why don't you want me to do this? I don't understand.
This has been occupying your every waking moment for months. Months! It's all you talk about. I'm ready to have my wife back.
This is unbelievable. I don't know what to say. I thought you were happy I had found a way to contribute.
Why don't you contribute like the other doctors' wives? Host luncheons, volunteer to read to the men, or write letters that they dictate to you. There are many ways to help that don't involve... that don't require this level of closeness.
That's absurd.
Is it? How many hours alone did you spend with this soldier? How many consultations, and you don't even have a mask to show for it?
We were working on it. He had sat for his first mold this last time we met. We were starting the process. I didn't want to push him. You told me not to push, remember?
You have to think about how it looks to the outside world. It's inappropriate. We've given this little enterprise a try. It doesn't seem to be working out. So we can move on to something else.
No.
I'm sorry?
I've been able to see the impact this can have. The men Derwent made masks for have been brought back from near death. I know I can help do that too, and I won't let you take it from me.
Anna, you haven't been able to help anyone on your own. This is a waste of time and resources in the hospital. You've monopolized the consultation room for a week and to no result. The man you were meeting with was discharged without a mask. We determined that he didn't need it to function as a normal...
You spoke with him? When? You didn't know he had been discharged.
Yes. I spoke with him before he left, but he'd already made the decision to leave the hospital. I just seconded that decision.
Why? You knew I was working with him.
He wanted to leave. He was fully recovered and his wounds healed as well as anyone could have hoped for. We needed the space for the newly injured.
I think you did this on purpose.
You're suggesting that I discharged him so you wouldn't be able to finish his mask. The mask that he clearly wasn't interested in having made. Is that what you're saying?
I want to help him. I was helping him. I just needed a little more time. He was coming around to
Anna,
see.
Anna, please.
I'm going to find Clarence and help him. I'm going to finish this mask for him, even if he's not a patient anymore.
Well, if he's not a patient here, you can't use the hospital facilities. Where will you meet with him?
I'll meet him at the house.
Absolutely not.
Or at a cafe, or at the Red Cross, or a barn. I don't know, but I'll figure something out. You don't need to concern yourself with that.
Well, I can see that you're determined to see this through. Fine. But after you reach out to him and he says he doesn't want your help, will you promise me that you will stop this? That you'll find something more suitable to focus on? Anna.
There are more men coming in every day. You said so yourself.
Yes.
And many of them have injuries on their faces?
Some do, but they're able to recover themselves without needing your particular brand of help.
You can't speak for them. You don't know if this would help them or not. If I can help even one of them, I would rather do that than anything else.
If you're insistent on continuing this frivolous project, you must find your own place to work. I won't have a consultation room tied up in nonsense any longer. I'm the head of this hospital, and that's final.
Fine. I'll leave you to your patients, Dr. Ladd.
I have a rendezvous with death. At some disputer's barricade, when spring comes back with rustling shade, and apple blossoms fill the air.
I have a rendezvous with death.
When spring brings back blue days and fair.
I left the hospital with no clear destination in mind. I knew I didn't need to stay there anymore. Taking a space from someone who really needed it, Dr. Ladd was right. No sense in hiding from it. Didn't know where I was going, though. My brother's place. Didn't seem right to burden him. Didn't seem right to frighten his wife, his children.
It may be he shall take my hand and lead me into his dark land and close my eyes and quench my breath.
It may be I may pass him still.
I have a rendezvous with death.
On some scarred slope of battered hill.
When spring comes round again this year, and the first meadow flowers appear.
Anna says she can make a mask that people won't know. Why wouldn't I want that? Doesn't make sense not to. Seems simple. I don't know. Can't organize my thoughts. Don't sleep much anymore. Nurses kept offering me morphine, kept asking if I'm having bad dreams. I said no. Dreams show up no matter if I sleep or not. Don't want morphine though, because then who would hear them? If I don't, who will?
God knows 'twere better to be deep pillowed in silk and scented down.
Where love throbs out in blissful sleep,
pulse nigh to pulse,
and breath to breath.
Where hushed awakenings are dear.
But I have a rendezvous with death.
Probably better to just end it, don't you think? Probably better. Makes me weak, though. Dr. Ladd said I could still be of use at the front, that he'd sign my papers to return. Broke out in a cold sweat at the thought. So I'm a coward. Seems fitting to take a coward's way out.
At midnight in some flaming town.
when spring trips north again this year.
And I do my pledge word am true.
I shall not fail that rendezvous. Thanks again for listening to Radio Plays. If you liked what you heard and are interested in helping us share more amazing new works, check out our Patreon page where you can donate and even become a season sponsor. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Radio Plays. Copper Angel was written by Emily McLean and directed by Clay Brackney Wandelier. The cast featured Kara Limer as Anna Ladd, Sean M. Dale as Dr. Maynard Ladd, David Soika as Clarence Edgars and Blind Soldier, Anna Fontaine as Wife, Nurse 1, and Young Mother, Olivia Long as Nurse 2, Wounded Soldier, and Child, and Robin Sneller as Recruiter, Doctor, and Priest. Sound design by Sean M. Dale with editing support from Clay Brackney Wandelier. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts to catch our next episode.